This is Who Gets What. Greetings, this is Morton Marcus and my co-host John Guy just introduced our program today. Our guest is Kim Brand, that's B-R-A-N-D. He is no relation that we know to Kim Basinger, nor to the dictator who's at the head of the government in North Korea. Kim, you've been with us before and we've talked about 3D printing. And what we'd like to do is find out what's the latest in 3D printing as far as you're concerned.
Well, there's a lot to report. Over the last few years, the technology has become more widely used in manufacturing. When we first became involved, we spent close to $2 million on equipment, very high-end industrial 3D printing equipment. But we pivoted pretty quickly to educational applications and we actually produced 3D printing summer camps. So we had 1,000 kids in our summer camps back in the 2016, 17, 18. But 3D printing was simply an on-ramp to having students explore their own creativity, critical thinking, problem-solving skills. So now we build innovation centers in schools, commonly called a makerspace, and we have them now in 5 states. So we're very proud to report we probably have 100,000 students all in with those various school districts, and we're reaping the rewards of kids getting back in touch with hands-on learning.
Now, I don't understand hands-on learning if they're working with a machine that, what are they doing? They're programming the machine?
No, it's commonly misunderstood. There can be coding. Coding is a recently adopted Indiana standard, so that would be a happy thing. But it's really innovation. When your hands are involved, you get the brain for free. That's one of the lines I use with our teachers. Kids are amazingly creative. They're curious until they get to about fifth grade. And if you give them tools and materials, they find incredible ways to put them together. I mean, just think about Legos. Think about what you've done with cardboard. I mean, the most valuable part of buying a new refrigerator is you get a box for your kids to play in. So we have a misunderstanding about what are trade skills and how they may be limited to the silos of what a employer would want, but what our society really wants are creative, engaged, persistently curious problem solvers. And that's what hands-on learning really, really leads to.
Now, wait a second. I took a shop class, woodworking, in junior high school. That I can see is hands-on. And I can understand even the printing class I took in junior high school where we set print, as they used to do. I don't see where using a keyboard is hands-on learning.
Well, then come visit one of our makerspaces. It's not coding. It's not virtual. It's real. I mean, kids spend a lot of time in virtual space, but most of the time they're consumers of whatever content streams on their device. But in a makerspace, in an innovation center, they're producers. They're taking materials and innovating ways to put them together to accomplish some end. And there's always surprises. Nature is full of surprises. So, I use the example of trying to build a picture frame. I don't know if you've ever done that. You mentioned shop class. You may have. Mm-hmm. Cutting a 45-degree angle, having those angles line up to produce a rectangular box sounds easy. It's easy to do with paper and pen when you're drawing it, but it's amazingly difficult. And it's the surprises that happen when you endeavor to make something that really, really get the juices flowing in terms of creativity and problem solving. So I envy your shop class. I went to a prep school. I didn't have a shop class, but the best man in my wedding did at a public school. We raced boats together, had a lot of fun doing it, but we needed some tools that we didn't have. So we broke into his shop class so we could use his drill press.
And are the police still after you?
I think the statute of limitations has passed, but I'm just trying to communicate that the driving force that humans have had through millennia to make things, to solve problems with tools and with materials. 3D printing is really just another episode of the drive that humans have to master their environment. And 3D printing is a handy way to do it. I was going to add that the kids that we served had almost to a kid hadn't made much to that age. Mm-hmm. And their parents didn't really expect them to make much. But when Friday rolled around at one of our camps and one of the students had designed and printed a lock, I mean, like a legit key lock, one of the parents said to the other ones, "We thought he was the dumb one." And the takeaway from that experience is that kids learn in different ways. We know that they express themselves in different ways. And it's a shame that we have this rather standardized, homogenized education system that values one kind of learning. There are many kinds of learning. And hands-on learning, I think, is a core value that educators can adopt, a core method, I should say, that, as I said before, that gets the brain involved when the hands are engaged. And that has turned out to practically to save kids' lives. And we have an experience of a student at Tech High School who became one of our camp counselors who attempted suicide. I think his grade point average at the time was like 0.5. You'll find his story in Chalkbeat if you Google Jason Brewster. And he's become a friend, and he graduated ultimately from Ivy Tech. And the story accounts his transformation through his hands-on learnings experiences. And Morton, I know that you have an interest in Gary and the region. We installed three maker spaces there in elementary schools, and all three became STEM certified, which is a high standard set by the Indiana State Department of Education. They could probably have gotten there without their maker space, but to see those kids mastering the laser cutter, the 3D printer, the electronics, the coding too, but to see them focus on accomplishing an end result to get in early and want to stay late, those behaviors, that the mindset of making is the real goal that we're trying to reach. Our state needs more makers.
And is a maker space comparable to an old shop class, which was a permanent large room in an educational building? Is that what a maker space is?
Well, it takes lots of forms. Some schools can't afford to dedicate a whole room to it, but teachers, being dedicated the way that they are, sometimes have a cart that they'll roll around. But in most of our maker spaces, they may be former classrooms. You know, what's transformed in education over the last few years is computer labs. I mean, you don't need a computer lab hardly anymore. So we've transformed a lot of computer labs. But they're as various as the champions in the buildings come to us with a vision, and we try to implement. So yes, it's oftentimes a classroom. We do put shop tools in there, 3D printers, laser cutters, to name a few, robotics. But these also become places where cross-curricular activities are held, the social studies, art classes. You can do math experiments and certainly physics in a makerspace. So it becomes a place where multiple teachers might collaborate, which is a happy thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you'd recognize it. You'd probably call it a shop class, but today it has what I think are more modern tools.
And I'm also having problems with this word printer. I can't imagine building anything on my little printer over here to the right of my desk.
Well, you know, it's an invention that now is about 30 years old. If I really netted it out, the kinds of printers we put in schools are called fused deposition modeling. It's a fancy term. You can Google FDM. But imagine weed whacker filament from a garden weed whacker. You extrude it through a hot nozzle and it becomes plastic, and you move it around on a horizontal surface. Think of a Cartesian coordinate system in different places where you extrude plastic in some place and pause for a moment while you move it. So you can essentially stack layers of extruded plastic across a surface. And with the right software, which is free and easy to use, you can make stuff. But I want to point out that the printing part is an unfortunate misnomer. There's nothing about pushing a button and having stuff pop out. This is a process. And what we explain to schools is that 3D printing is really a 10-chapter book, the last chapter of which is making stuff. But on the front end, you've got the design, the computer-aided drafting, or, you know, the computer-enabled machining. This is a real process, and it doesn't always work. I want to point out to you that I called 3D printers a problem delivery device because they have a frustrating habit of messing up. And that also is, I think, a happy outcome because, you know, kids who are used to having predictable outcomes from predictable inputs might find it a bit off-putting, but it's also challenging. And through frustration, I think, comes the lessons that persistence matters. And so we're also in the business of training kids how to think. And some of those habits of thinking mean that failure is just feedback. We got to convince kids that failure, as it may be with a graded test, is not the end of the story. It's oftentimes the beginning of learning.
Now, in a side conversation, you've used some terms that intrigue me. One is robot-proof jobs. How does that relate to this?
Well, there was a great book by the same title. It really describes that in the workforce of the future, the kind of work that robots can and with artificial intelligence will be doing more of leaves a narrower field on which creative kids will find a profitable, you know, prosperous avenue. So what I think schools should be doing is preparing kids to be more flexible, to be more agile, to use their creativity. You know, the brain is probably one of the most complex things in the universe, you know, trillions of synapses and nodes and other stuff I don't understand. But what it's really good at, pattern recognition, the sort of interconnectedness, you know, where I think creativity comes from is where those synapses spark and fire across the hemispheres of your cranium. You know, you don't get that in AI. I mean, as smart as they are and as wonderful a tool as they think that they'll be, a robot-proof job is by its definition, it requires a certain flexibility that AIs, at least up to now, haven't exhibited. So I'd like for schools to focus on the kinds of things that we can't get computers to do very effectively. For example, I was the subject of an article in the IBJ. It talked about how our 3D printing summer camps failed. Again, you can use that term for feedback, but in it, I talk about how stupid it is for schools to be testing kids on state capitals, for example. You know, Morton, John, you probably had a school experience similar to mine, you know, where it was drill and kill, where it was recall that mattered. Those jobs are not the ones that we should be preparing kids for. We can have computers do that stuff. You know, insight, you know, being able to make judgments. Those are the kinds of skills that the economy of the future, the workforce of the future will really value.
I was wondering, again, this concept seems to be escaping from my understanding. You say, get the hands involved. Well, when I'm writing something on my computer, writing is the wrong word, but that's the word we use. Mm-hmm. Actually, what I'm doing is pressing keys on a keyboard. My hands are very busy. Is that within the purview of what you're talking about?
Let's say that what you're doing and what I'm describing is the physical manifestation of engagement. Okay, you may be pressing keys, but I do a lot of writing too. And I know that when those keys produce a written word, that's when I think the logic of sentence structure and idea exposition, the reforming that you do once you write, you backspace, and I don't mean making typographical errors. I mean, sure, Looking at what those ideas are that have been sort of flushed out of your brain and onto paper, that gives you a real opportunity to think more deeply about it. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, cognition expert by any means, but I think it's when you integrate the visual, the physical, the mental, you know, the practical sort of outcomes of producing something, there is a certain magic that I think they say that, you know, the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. And I think it's always been that way. 3D printing is just another vehicle to express an idea. I mean, you can hold an idea for an invention your whole life and never actually see it come to fruition. But I'll tell you, John and Morton, plenty of times around the house, I'll give you an example where I needed a little gadget. My wife bought a little bench for our front porch. The concrete there is a little uneven. Four-footed, you know, stool or a four-footed, you know, little couch wasn't going to be level for my outsized brother-in-law. And so I decided to build a little spacer. I mean, it's not very complicated, but because of my confidence, knowing that in just a few minutes I could 3D print, you know, basically a foot for this bench, I just whipped it up, and it became a means to an end. But it also was a terribly satisfying sort of little project because I made my wife happy. I made the bench safe for my brother-in-law to sit on, and I nevertheless had the, you know, the pride. Let me just leave it that way. A lot of what we get kids to experience for maybe the first or one of the very few times in their lives is the pride of construction. Having pride in what you do feeds the soul. And I know I'm maybe becoming a little more philosophical here, but whether it's writing or making simple, you know, bench feet spacers, or I made a little gadget that holds my eyeglasses on my forearm, you know, it gives a certain self-confidence that you stand up straighter, you carry yourself a bit more confidently. I don't know how to explain it, but if I can get kids to come out of school and like themselves, okay, and love to learn, that's the only two questions on the final exam as far as I'm concerned. That's what I told the reporter in the IBJ article. Come out of school, love yourself, love to learn. Everything else will work out.
Jim, you've made me a little nervous about my domestic relationships with a story about the bench. Because for years, when asked to repair something, I have said as diplomatically as I could, I can't.
Oh.
Now you're saying with 3D printing, that option may not be available to me.
Well, let me say that excuse won't be available. The option may be. I mean, 3D printers today for home use are a few hundred dollars. At a very successful program at Noblesville High School and at Hamilton Heights High School, we guided kids through the construction of their own 3D printers from kits funded by local employers who saw this as an on-ramp to talent, and all the kids took their 3D printers home. It was marvelous. And I don't know what they did with them, but, you know, let's call, you know, Noblesville, Hamilton Heights, you know, prosperous sort of demographics. I did the same thing at Work One on Shadeland. We had kids who, you know, had suffered, maybe didn't get out of high school. Maybe they were wearing ankle bracelets, and they got the same sort of pride, enthusiastic learning engagement that those kids in Hamilton County got. And I've seen the same thing happen in Gary, where students who had really never achieved the kind of what I would say demonstrable success, only demonstrable in the eyes of teachers, you know, trying to apply standards in their whole lives. And what they came away with was something they could show their grandmas and grandpas and siblings and brothers, sisters, and, well, anyway, the neighborhood, and tell them, look what I made. So I know I've pivoted a bit to your incapacity, John, to make stuff around the house. And I'm sure that you're quite bright enough. And for a few hundred bucks, you could actually, you know, please your wife again for the brains that she married you for.
Well, that's a nice.
We're not going to pursue that line.
No, not very far. I'll change it for a more definitional, philosophical item that you mentioned, which was the word egalitarian. How does that apply in all of this thinking?
Well, you know, I've given it a lot of thought. We, perhaps mistaken, I'm going to say mistakenly, believe that your zip code may determine your potential. And it's a shame that Morton, an economist, could probably make that case. But what if I tapped the talent of those students wherever they lived? And like a Hoosier crop, we harvested it. And we believe that would be the pathway to prosperity, that their talent, their ability to add value in a situation was what should determine their destiny. So I think giving youth skills, I mean, it's always been sort of a pathway to success. That's why we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on colleges, but who knows if that's a sustainable business model. But talent, value add, creativity, all those skills, we nurture in an innovation center, in a maker space. And kids come away with confidence that they possess it. So that's why I say it's egalitarian. It's even-handed. Another word, I mean, it's democratic. You come in, you demonstrate talent, you're rewarded both personally and potentially professionally, and it can uplift an entire community, state, country, world.
I think it's a very positive picture that you paint, and the philosophy behind it really is not limited to making physical things. That's what I think is particularly important, that we can have students in a classroom creating stories.
Absolutely.
Right. It is not tied to the particular mechanism. It's tied to a process of getting young people to free themselves from certain limitations that they think they have.
Well put, Martin. We have unfortunately emphasized the role of a student, especially in front of some of these devices, as a consumer. And what we're anxious, in fact, we're dedicated to shifting is to the student in the role of a producer, a maker of content, to use an artist, for example.
Yes.
You know, a mechanic, you know, an inventor, an entrepreneur. I know that the state is quite enthusiastic about promoting the new STEM skills, the new STEM standards, science, mm-hmm. technology, engineering, and math skills. But I'd like to follow up and say that, you know who those STEM students work for? Entrepreneurs. So we should also be emphasizing our state's interest in helping cultivate a mindset of entrepreneurship.
Well, entrepreneurship always makes people think of business activities. And I would argue that a good museum director is an entrepreneur. Yeah. And we have to have a broader concept than we've had in the past of what human activity is.
Well played. Yes, I agree.
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed just yesterday was going back and reading some of the writings of one of my professors at UCLA, where he very strongly says we shouldn't think only of wealth maximization. We should think as well of utility maximization, which is a phrase that has gotten out of the economics profession, out of business, actually. But it's the idea of enjoying and getting value out of something rather than just money and the ability to then buy experiences.
I, of course, I would agree. I think fulfillment is sometimes made sort of a second-class outcome of an educational experience. I think to the extent that we can live a life of fulfillment, of experiences, mm-hmm. sharing, I think is part of that. I mean, far be it from me to lecture either of you on the kinds of lives and living and goals that I might have determined are important for myself. But yes, I think we need to spend a lot more time on what they sometimes derisively call social emotional learning. You know, I think we all live inside of our bodies, and we ought to try and do as well at that as we do on the SAT.
Which is the reason that I believe in rooting for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Because you learn how to deal with difficulty. You learn to deal with disappointment and have those few moments of exquisite joy when they win.
And presumably a bat or a baseball could be manufactured by a computer printing.
Or a simulation that exists completely virtually, but I hope not. I hope that the dust and the dirt and the runs and the hits and all of those things continue to be reality focused and for the rest of my days anyway.
Now, on a grand scale, did I read in the last year there's some application of computer printing to build homes?
Oh, yes. In fact, there's a project here in town. I don't know its current status, but in the Martindale-Brightwood area, a very innovative, hard-charging nonprofit executive is fundraising around the purchase of a machine that can actually build homes. They've already found the property for it, and I believe that their team has already received training from the company that produces the machine. It's a heavy lift. I mean, I think that machine's $700,000 or $800,000, but the potential is to build homes, simple homes, very quickly, on the order of a week, with a machine that basically has a large gantry. Nevertheless, works about the same way of the little printers that we used at Noblesville. They extrude, in their case, concrete or material like it, and continue to operate pretty much, 10, 12 hours a day, spitting out, pooping out the material that forms the shape of a simple home. But if you just Google 3D printing homes, I'm sure you'll find lots of pictures. It remains to be seen, whether or not that can be done and successfully in our climate. I think where it's been used mostly to now are in more temperate climates in South America.
Well, there's a great future here. And I think, Kim, we're going to have to invite you back again. So many of our guests have the characteristic of being involved with ongoing circumstances. We've been talking with Kim Brand today, who is First Maker's Place, I believe is the name of your organization.
First Maker Space.
First Maker Space. Okay. Right. I'll try to put that down. You've been listening to Who Gets What, which is a podcast that we hope you enjoy and that you'll join us next time when we have another interesting guest.